a shot in the dark. Wary sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, kids, here we go. Episode 280. Wow, we are just charging towards 300. I don't know. What am I going to do for 300? It just seems like a serious milestone, 300. I think we need to do another live show. You know, give me some feedback. thecounterposition@gmail.com, or you can Facebook us, or tweet at me at counterposition. Tell me what you think about the 300th episode. Let's start planning something fun. Maybe we'll do a big live extravaganza, but without going all the way to, I tell you what I'd like to do. I'd like to do it from California. I'd like to set up in Hope and Justice Schneer's backyard, get the Marings, get Michael Miley and his wife over, and get all kinds of the Fikes, get all kinds of fun people, Wes Bancroft, all kinds of people that have been on the show. Maybe do a special live 2-hour show. That'd be fun. I don't know. We'll see. I don't even know what the logistics are for that kind of thing. I am such the worst tech guy on her. All right. So, Friday weekly wrap up. It is a beautiful day in Denver, Colorado. Like spring or summer, sipping on a glass of, French Sauvignon Blanc, a little white wine for the day. Let's do the live weather report. Let's check it out. What is the weather right now? It's like 77, 80 degrees. It is 80 degrees in Denver, Colorado. And I think it's supposed to snow tomorrow night. That is kind of typical. Yep, tomorrow night it's going to rain, turn to snow. Yep, we're going to get like some snow flurries overnight. Tomorrow night it's 80 right now. Oh, goodness gracious. You know, I just hope that that doesn't mean that, we're in for a weird hyper hot summer. You know, I could go on a riff about microcycles and macrocycles and all that, and how, whether that has to do anything to with global warming and all that, but it's Friday and I'm in a good mood and you should be in a good mood too, because you don't have to listen to me the entire show. I have my integral ecology reading group coming over, like I did a couple weeks ago. And Adam, I almost got shot by Wendell Berry Beach, is coming over early and is going to do a couple of segments with me. So I've got the thing set up for interview as we speak. And when the lovely and talented Adam Beach gets here, you will hear his arrival live. So, speaking of little housekeeping on the weather and whatnot, I am posted up in my living room with all the lovely natural light and all the windows open. And it's been nice and quiet and just wonderful until I decided to record my show from the dining room. And of course now two neighbors have come home, fired up music, sirens are going all over the place. It's like, it was the most peaceful day until the literally like about 10 seconds before I push record. It's so typical. So if you hear ambiance, I just wanted to kind of have the feel of that, you know, road noise, people coming by talking, the sounds of the windows open. First really, really warm day. And we've had 70 degrees, but 80, that's a whole different ball game. That's like California right now. I feel like I'm back in California. Anyway, so there you go. So got my reading group tonight, hosting at my house, which I'm kind of trying not to stress. I always stress when I'm hosting anything. And it's stupid because they're all friends of mine. It's all dudes. It's not like anybody's going to come over and judge my bathroom or whatever. I've mentioned the bathroom 2 days in a row. I just realized. Well, you know, we all have bathrooms, do we not? But you know, when you invite people over into your home, you want to kind of like, you know, you're having people over is like Facebook, where you select the drama and trauma that you let people see. And you try to put kind of like your best foot forward, like, oh yeah, look, there's a chessboard over here all set up with nice pieces, because that's the kind of person I am. I mean, we often pass evenings by playing chess and having some port and discussing the ideas that the chessboard pretty much sits there and we watch Netflix. I have seen people play chess on the chessboard. I myself I'm not a chess player. I'm just far too ADD for that. But you know, when you have people over, you want to go, oh no, this is like, you want to get your house like just about as clean as it gets. And then you say, oh my God, my house is such a mess. I'm sorry. And they go, oh, no, it looks great. It looks great. And then they're playing that game in their head. Like, well, does he really think this is dirty, or is he just saying that? Or maybe, man, if this is dirty, then my house is a mess, you know, and you play that game. You know, not long ago, I went over to some guy's house. A young Catholic guys have a guy house here in Denver, and they had an engagement party for someone, and their bathroom was immaculate. And I told a couple of them, I'm like, man, you guys have to stop that. You're raising the bar for the rest of us. And that's just not okay. Okay. There's a certain level of low expectation that we as males in this world count on, you know, and if you let women know that we could clean, and you know, it's not like it's the lack of knowledge, then they're going to expect that. So you have betrayed masculinity, you know. Oh, chatty first segment. Well, if you're listening to this live on the live stream, and I know that both of you are, if either of you happen to be in Denver, Colorado, I would urge you to grab your phone, continue listening, but get into your car and head as quickly as you possibly can to the Knights of Columbus Hall up kind of by the cathedral. I don't know where it's on, Grant Street. I don't know. If you live here, you know where the Knights of Columbus Hall is. They have all kinds of stuff there. Because Concerts for Causes is tonight, and the lovely and or talented Perry West is playing a show tonight and it's $5 to get in and a pair of socks, I'm assuming, for the homeless. Maybe just they're going to make a mural out of socks or something. I'm assuming that's for the homeless because it's a cause. It's Concerts for Causes. Tonight, if you want to come here, if you want to know, why would I want to go listen to Perry West? I don't even know what Perry West sounds like. Well, for starters, his song Kooks and Kings, it's my theme music. So if you like my theme music and you've always been like, oh my goodness, I live in Denver, Colorado, and I love his theme music, and it's 7:05. I need to get myself to the Knights of Columbus Hall. You should do that. All right. So, man, I just saw something disconcerting last night. And, one of my professors from back at Thomas Aquinas College is a prince among men. I mean, he's just one of the best human beings I know. I know there's people who can kind of take him and leave him online, because it's kind of writing online is kind of like it's hard to put communication in context if you've never spoken to the person, you know. And this guy is just one of my favorite human beings on earth. He's just so intelligent and so sweet and so humble and just such a good human being. And he's just poured himself out in hospitality and love and wonder and in kind of formation with so many students over the years. And he's just a prince among men. I mean, I cannot say enough about him. And the reason I'm naming him is because it was just kind of a nasty story. And I didn't, you know, this guy online that I guess is, you know, I have friends in this on Facebook that are kind of like, kind of public Catholic intellectuals or people who are kind of like blog or do something. And somehow I've gotten connected to them through other people that are also engaged in kind of that public sphere. And I don't know them, but we'll end up commenting on the same stuff pretty frequently. Like author Sebastian Roseman. I don't know author. I've exchanged thread comments with him multiple times. We've gotten Facebook friendly enough to where if you see something fun or interesting about coffee, he might throw it on my wall. I might tag him in something if it's sounds like something he said on one of his blogs or about something Polish that I think he'd be interested in. Or, you know, but we're not friends. We're that weird modern commodity of digital friends, you know? And so there's a guy that is in that group and he's friends with this professor of mine and he's gone off the deep end of like class war and he's some kind of a Catholic. I can't tell, but I mean, he is just, you know, off the deep end. And I mean, according to a couple of the comments afterwards, I mean, the guy might be an alcoholic or something, but my friend is waiting for a transplant for a kidney. And this guy just basically came out of nowhere and said, you support all these, you know, nefarious political causes and you don't care about the common man and you're just all about the rich trampling everybody. You know what? It's like, I hope you die. I hope you don't get that kidney. I hope you die before you get that kidney and I hope you rot in hell. And I mean, like all this like crazy evil stuff. And I was just like, maybe I play in fairly genteel parts of the internet. I don't really go to troll land very often. But man, I never encountered something like that firsthand. Just, you know, oh goodness, we're out of time on the first break. I want to talk about this more when I get back. You're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Whitley.
I'm a sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. Only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, man, that went downhill fast. I'm all like, hey, it's a fun day. It's 80 degrees. I'm drinking white wine. There's going to be a good show tonight. We're reading books. Okay, let me tell you about internet hatred. I'm just like, no, seriously, it was just like, I was just going through my night last night and it just depressed the heck out of me. I was like, I couldn't believe that I was seeing what I was seeing. And I went over to the guy's page and it was public and I read the thread in context and it was just completely uncalled for. And I can only hope, and my friend who had this happen was in the process of, you know, kind of confirming that he was going to defriend the guy and asking for help on how to technically defriend. I'm like, I can't believe you don't defriend people all the time. Well, actually, I can believe it because I don't defriend people very often. And I have people who say all kinds of mean stuff about me and people I love, but not that mean. They're just like, you know, you're a racist. You're an idiot because you support this position or something, you know. But sometimes those insults don't sting really that bad anymore. Like you're a hater. You hate. What do you mean by hate? You disagree with me. That's basically what they mean by hate. You're intolerant. I'm tolerant. You're tolerant. Yeah. What does that mean? It means that I accept people who think like I do. That's just not what the word means. But you know, and I know that there's this like trolls that are out there, and I'm sure that if this show gets big enough and I get enough Twitter followers and I start putting out, if I got more social media active, I would draw trolls. There's no doubt. And I just have such a thin skin. I've always said that if I start putting out like a lot of media online, like YouTube videos or like, you know, lots of public media of some kind, I just, no comments. I'll just turn the comments off. I just don't have the stomach to ignore or monitor or moderate or put up with that kind of stuff. And when I saw that, I just could not believe. And it, and the thing is that it frightens me. And someone in one of the comments referring back to my professor said, talking to him about this, said, and I remember the line, there's a line in, That Hideous Strength. It's the third in the series of novels called The Space Trilogy by C.S. Lewis. And, the novels are, sidebar advertisement for The Space Trilogy. Absolutely amazing. Incredible. I read them when I need to believe again. Sometimes it's like, they're science fiction, but, and they're like interstellar travel and aliens and all this stuff, but it's so good. And That Hideous Strength is the third one. It's darker and it's more kind of supernatural and mixed with super science, sci-fi and stuff. And it's basically his book, Abolition of Men, writ into sci-fi fantasy. I cannot recommend The Space Trilogy enough. It's Out of the Silent Planet, Perelandra, and That Hideous Strength. Spectacular. But there's a line in there when they were talking about Merlin. I think that these bad guys had resurrected Merlin, I think. And they were talking about how he comes from a time when things were still gray enough in places that you could kind of, there was a gray line between some things, and there were places and powers and stuff that hadn't quite settled as starkly. And you could kind of, avoid picking a side, or kind of like at least have friends across the aisle, so to speak. You know, the things weren't so black and white. Now, this is fantasy, right? I'm not saying there was ever the case. I'm assuming once Satan and all his angels fell after they made the decision, permanent decision, and you know, everything that is in creation is on one side or the other, you kind of have to pick a line. But that being said, this guy quoted that in reference to this, and he was in our current political environment, social and economic environment. There really seems to be a line that we've crossed where, you are either on this side of the line or not that side of the line, or on that side of the line. You're one of the two. Either you have really bought into class struggle and wealth is the enemy as long as it's not yours, and that America should be basically a socialist nation and we should have no borders and everyone should have exactly the same amount of everything. And if anybody has anything, they stole it or exploited for it. Now, not to say there isn't like subtle, you know, not to say there's not subtle truth to some of those things, right? I mean, there might be a guy who's a really, really good dude that is really rich and gives a lot of his money away and stuff. But maybe the way he made that money, let's say maybe he made his money, maybe he made his money in coffee, but in the 80s, when it was still kind of like, you know, we really hadn't figured out how things work in origin countries, and some of the coffee we were bringing in and making good money on over here, there was kind of being built on the backs of the poor. And maybe he's a small micro roaster. And back then the structures, you didn't really have, you know, as much contact with origin. And so maybe a bunch of people kind of suffered and were taken advantage of for him to get green coffee at the price that he got it. And he made a bunch of money and now he gives it away. Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's no doubt there was some secondary kind of like issue there, but this idea that if you have money, you exploited or cheated or stole or oppressed to get it is like the fundamental idea. And on the other side is that, you know, good people work hard, and if you're good and you work hard, you'll make a lot of money, you know. And there's people are poor because they chose to be poor and because they're addicted to the government and they think somebody owes them something and blah, blah, blah. And it's these two sides, and never the twain shall meet. And I just don't agree with either side. I think it's a false dichotomy. And I'm being put in a situation where it's like, you have to be pro-life, which means you put abortion and be an anti-abortion above everything else, no matter what, all the time. Or you, hey, what's up? Ladies and gentlemen, the lovely and talented Adam, I almost got shot by Wendell Berry Beach, has entered the building. How's it going? I told my listeners that you were coming and you were going to get to witness your coming. All right. Well, there's a refrigerator in there. See, this is you get to see what a real interest sounds like here. So anyway, so there's another man that is not willing to accept false dichotomies, not willing to accept those easy answers and be forced to go to either side of the line. Oh, I remember what I was talking about, abortion. So you either have to be like, abortion is the same as anything else and there's nothing, or it's no big deal. And the real problem is poverty, and the problem of poverty is people having money. And you have to just kind of buy that, or you have to go to the other side and go, the only thing that matters is being anti-abortion. We call that pro-life, and everything else, war, poverty, economics, drones blowing people up, all the death penalty, all that has to take a backseat, and you have to just be completely and totally anti-abortion, and we're going to call that pro-life. Right. Those are the two sides. You either have to be on, that's one issue, for instance, and you got to just pick one of those two. And if you're on the wrong side, then I hate you and I'm going to smash your windows. And I'm just like, I'm just not down for that. And it's really starting to freak me out. And just a quick couple things I want to make note of before I get talking to Adam here in a second. You know, it's hard to know. I'm getting really frustrated. I'm getting super frustrated with this modern political thing so much. And one of the reasons I'm getting so frustrated is people on one side are doing things that are completely unprecedented and possibly illegal and completely over the line and just violation of anything common or decent, and then acting like it's just no big deal whatsoever. And everyone else is freaking out. Then there's, on the other side, you have people who, there's people doing stuff that there's absolutely precedented. It's absolutely not shocking. It's not outrageous. There's a long precedence for it. And everyone's reacting as if, oh, we've never seen this ever before. This has never happened before. This is completely outrageous. And then they go, well, actually, and then they list like 39 times that presidents have done that same thing. And all you can really argue is, yeah, but they weren't orange and spoke in complete sentences and didn't talk about their ratings on their show or so. I mean, yeah, I mean, like I said, if you listen to the show, you know I'm not some big Trump fan by any means, but I just think that both sides of the aisle need to be A, committed to reality. We need to be committed to actually loving the real and loving the good and trying to come to understand what is real and seek common ground when it can be found. Yeah, there you go. I got an amen out of Adam Beach, who's coming back on the next segment here in a second. But, and the other thing is, I just read an article about the guy that did a bunch of the marketing for who was that? Tuckster. The guy that he wrote Trust Me, I'm Lying. I can't remember the guy's name. Anyway, Tucker Max. He did all the stuff for Tucker Max where he used outrage and purposely leaked things that would cause outrage about his book tour to get free publicity and all that. And he broke down what Milo's doing right now and how everyone's reacting to it. And it seems like this has become outrage, purposely seeding leaks to get outrage, to distract, to cause hits, to sell books, or to get more people out, or to inflame, infuriate them and get them in the voting box or whatever, has become the normal mode of mass rhetoric. And I firmly am not interested in playing. Anyway, praise God, Adam's here. You don't have to listen to me only anymore. So you're listening to The Counter Position. We'll be back after the break with Adam. I almost got shot by Wendell Berry Beach. And I'll see you on the other side.
Then how we crave a hanging in the dark.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
People singing, please don't stay, but please don't go.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley. And as promised, I have a special treat. No, not Chris' special treat, Stefanik, not that special treat. But the aforementioned Adam, I almost got shot by Wendell Berry Peach.
My only claim to fame.
Come on, hold the mic up to your mouth.
My only claim to fame.
Thank you. That's not your only claim to fame.
It's my chief claim to fame.
I mean, it's a, well, I don't know. You have married a woman.
Ooh.
And you've procreated. You've made human life.
Three beautiful children.
Right. You have,
true.
You have defied your generation.
Yeah.
Limited your freedom by a daring choice of commitment.
I've realized my freedom.
You have realized your freedom. But you know, David Brooks and Rusty Reno at the New York Encounter were talking about how there was a time when just kind of there was a, let's call it a script, call it a track, whatever, but there was a certain things that we didn't question, and that was certain limits on the options. And so you kind of, you know, you went to college, you got a job, you got married, you had some kids, you know, and you could take detours off of that and side tours and kind of, but that train was always there to come get back on, you know, and it kind of performed, it kind of made a backbone that you could kind of riff off of, so to speak. And where these millennials are, he says the way that his students, they talk like, I mean, they're in a boat in the middle of an ocean with no direction that they have to go in. And just like barely a compass, and they just want to set out, and yet they feel completely driven to get someplace really amazing.
Something's going to happen.
Right.
And it's going to be amazing. It's somewhere in between A and infinity.
Right.
And I'm not sure what or when or how or with who or where, but it's going to be amazing.
I resemble that remark. I mean, I guess Calyx has kind of played the backbone for me, the thing that I've ran from and keep getting drawn back to or whatever, but it's, you know, I would say that it's funny. Like what is fame and what is to be, regarded is a good question, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I just noticed that, George Clooney and his wife, Amal,
okay.
are pregnant with twins, or actually she's pregnant with twins.
Wow.
But I keep seeing these headlines that George Clooney and his wife, Amal, are pregnant with twins. His wife is like this international humanitarian lawyer. She's like crazy educated, beautiful, an amazing woman in her own right. And they always say, you know, star of stage and screen, George Clooney and his wife, in parentheses, are pregnant with twins. And it's as if being kind of good looking and talking on a camera puts you the first of the line, even though someone else is the one carrying the kids, right? You know?
Yeah. I like Clooney. More than most people.
Wait, you like Clooney more than you like most people, or you like Clooney more than most people like Clooney?
Probably both.
Really?
Yeah.
I like his hair.
I have no opinion on his hair.
His hair has got that that old Hollywood.
Oh, yeah.
He's got Clark Gable hair. No, he's got like...
You got a point there.
Yeah, or he's got like the rat. He looks like he could be... He would have been in the Rat Pack, you know? He's kind of got that. Maybe it's just because of Ocean's 11, but he's kind of got that old Hollywood kind of thing going, you know? And I like him as an actor too. I admit it. I'm just using him as an example. Sorry if this falls into the hands of the good Mr. Clooney. I'm not besmirching your acting ability, and mad props on the hair. But what I'm saying is that your claim to fame should not be being shot at, which you didn't even get shot at. You just put yourself in a position where you could have been shot.
And I was with my wife at the time.
Right.
So there's an interrelation between these two.
Exactly.
And I think you're right that the beauty of my wife, the luck and grace of the beauty of my children. Yeah, that's my true claim to fame.
Absolutely. So can you got to hold that?
Oh, I got to.
Yeah, come on.
Okay. Eat it.
You got to eat it. You got to put it right up there. You know, I want my, you're going to drop pearls of wisdom. I know. And I want my listeners to hear every single word of it. All right. So something I was going to talk about on the show, Okay, I'm going to go ahead and throw this out, even though this is supposed to be part of the chatty first segment, but I got serious in the chatty first segment by talking about some internet hate that I witnessed the last night. But so Thomas Aquinas College got a new campus.
I heard that. My wife told me that.
Yeah. So see, that's why you hear things from your wife. She's a boon to wisdom.
She's a source of truth.
Absolutely. And she's beautiful, which is the visible form of the good.
That helps.
So
that
you helps. Have the all the transcendentals right there, the true, the good, and the beautiful. But she told you about this. Yeah. And so they got an old campus that was given to them. Well, I looked it up on Google, on Google Maps.
Moody.
It's Moody. Oh, I knew that already.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny, right?
Yeah.
D.L. Moody.
And there's going to be a museum.
There's going to be Moody. A D.L. Moody museum in the middle of Thomas Aquinas College, which is deliciously ironic in so many ways.
Indeed.
But right across the river from Northfield, Massachusetts, is an unincorporated area with a town called Satan's Playground.
What? No.
I'm not kidding.
You're fibbing.
It's called Satan's Playground. And here's what's even funnier or weirder. Is there are not one but three places within the vicinity of Vermont, Connecticut, and Massachusetts that are called Satan's Playground.
There you go.
This is the one that doesn't have an apostrophe, though. It's like Satan, like plural Satan, like Satan's, like wow. Plural. So there's multiple Satans, and this is their playground. And I guess it was because one of them was there were Indians killing and stealing stuff. In one place, it was just full of rocks, and just the terrain was so hard to get across. This one, evidently, somebody came over a hill expecting to see fertile green land for pastures, and it was just not. And they were just like, oh, it's like Satan's playground. So maybe this was like a saying back then when people were naming stuff, you know? Back in the age of naming things.
Man. Otherwise known as Wall Street.
Wall Street? Is that where they named stuff?
That's Satan's Playground.
Satan's Playground. Yeah, there you go. Maybe. So there's that. You know, in the campus out in California, it's kind of a tradition, actually. The campus in California outside Santa Paula is right on Santa Paula Creek. And where in the old Ferndale Ranch, which, by the way, is for sale. The entire ranch that surrounds Thomas Aquinas College is for sale for $5 million. I would love to buy it, set up a school of Wet'suwet'en anthropology, and just be like, and organize soccer matches with the Thomas. But there's a natural sulfur spring right down there. So like literally you give people directions. And you're like, okay, so you get off the 126 in Santa Paula, you come north on the one, you come, north on the 150, follow it through town. When you go around a big corner and then a bridge, and then you smell the smell of hell, turn right. Like you turn right at the smell of hell. And it is. It's just like you're just going along and you're like, oh God, what is that rotten egg? Oh, we're here. It's like there's a sulfur spring. So I think we always joke that they positioned it on purpose to make us smell hell every time we left the convent and had to come back in.
Abandon all hope, all ye who enter here.
Exactly. Receiving. That's what the last line of the part of that line is. There's a, because the reason I know that is because over the receiving department at the Barnes & Noble I worked in a long time ago, there was somebody had put a sign from Dante that said, and it was like a sign that said receiving. And then it said, abandon all hope, ye who enter here receiving. All right. So, Adam, you are here because we're going to talk about Peter Maurin. He's going to talk about justice. He's going to talk about freedom.
He's going to talk about cult.
Yeah, he's going to talk about cult and culture.
He's going to talk about culture.
Culture.
He's going to talk about cultivation.
Come on. I know that's the truth.
Three and one.
I think one of my favorite Adam Beach moments was at your birthday party when Perry West was playing some music.
Hey, what happens at my birthday party stays at my birthday party.
I was saying that we had achieved at least what St. Augustine would refer to as hilarity.
Yeah.
And
hilaritas.
Hilaritas in our all day eating and drinking. And Perry started playing some music, and you were responding to said music as if you were listening to a very good sermon in an old time Pentecostal church. You're like, come on.
I got Pentecostal roots.
I tell you what. So I got such a story to tell you about that off the air too. I gotta go. Well, I told the story on the air, but I want to tell the real unadulterated version of you off the air. All right, so Peter Marin, co-founder of the Catholic Worker Movement, crazy little guy from France that looked like a bomb. Mm. People kept thinking that he was a bomb. You know, all the good people get mistaken for bombs, I think.
Yeah, good stories. Good stories about him going to highly sought after speaker that he was.
Right.
Going to universities, going to women's clubs, going to this and that, and being mistaken for the riffraff.
Well, you know who used to have that happen to him all the time? Huh. Was Father Reginald Foster.
I don't know.
Reggie Foster was he's the last man on earth that hears, speaks, and writes Latin the way like Caesar did. He's the chief Latinist for the Vatican, or he was until recently got sick. He's a son of a Milwaukee plumber, had abandoned his religious habit years ago and just wore like blue coveralls. This is a guy that corrects the Pope's Latin grammar, and he would fall asleep in the grass outside the Vatican waiting for the bus, and people would give him change while he was asleep because he just looked like he was like some homeless bomb. He's the last true Latinist on earth. So, all right, we're at the end of the break. All right, come on, we're going to talk about this when we get back. You're listening to The Counter Position. I have wrangled Adam. I almost got shot by Wendell Berry Beach into talking to me. We'll see you on the other side.
Then all the color glass that painter's palettes mash, all the colors of my soul.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counter Position, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to save. Love bedecked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely, and I'm dull.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, and we are hunkered down in my dining room on an extremely warm Friday in the middle of February, 80 degrees outside. You're wearing a sweater. How are you not sweltering in this sweater?
I strive to wear the same thing every day of the year.
Regardless, huh?
It makes my life in the morning simpler.
But you have a shirt on under the sweater, so
that's immaterial.
You leave the sweater on all summer.
This sweater is it's where it's at.
Okay, that we're just gonna part ways. I went native while in California, and my goal in life, I switched. Okay, so when I was young, my goal as a young slacker in the early 90s. My goal was to be in my pajamas as late as possible during the day. And in fact, we defined success as such. And so we were young Christian guys trying to build something cool that would change the world. And people would ask us who we thought the most successful person in the world was. And we would without fail say, Hugh Hefner. And people would say, what do you mean, Hugh Hefner? And we say, well, you define success by how late in the day you're still in your pajamas. He lives in his pajamas, therefore, he is clearly the most successful person. Quaderat demonstrandum, QED, right? But now, after California for 11 years, my goal would be to be as close to naked as modesty would allow and climate would dictate at any point in time. I sweater.
Is that on your Match.com profile?
I don't have a Match.com pro. No.
And what a shame.
I have a Catholic
and
Match
what a
pro.
Shame. One of the many goods of the modern life.
I should have put, I do have a Catholic Match profile, which I should put that on my Catholic Match profile, but it might be taken for something other than what it is. You know, okay, so let's get back to bums.
Let's get back to
Peter Mark. Okay, now I got a good transition from the guy from this story to the guy that we used to get mistaken as a bum. You know, when you're in a city, you see some dude sleeping in a stairwell, you know, on a box or something, you know, you see homeless people in the city bumming. You never think, man, that could be a real possibility. Like, I should look into that. You know, you're never tempted to that lifestyle in any way. But when you're in California, last time I was in California, I was there for a business trip and I'm working my tail off, all these meetings. I carved out about an hour and a half to get down to the beach, and all I wanted to be was wearing nothing but a pair of trunks, have something to drink and a big fat burrito, mm-hmm. and just sit on the beach and get some sun. And I'm sitting there. I only had about 45 minutes when it was all said and done. Eat my burrito. And this dude comes by that's like a beach bum. He's got the Hemingway beard, nothing on but a pair of trunks. And he's got a big old cold beer and a bag and a burrito from the same place I got my burrito from. And I'm like, dude, he does that all day. That's what he did today.
The good life.
Right. Has he figured it out? You know, there's a good couple minutes where I was like, hey, wait a minute. Maybe he's the one that's figured this out. I just worked really hard all day to get here. And if I got it all done, if I achieved everything I wanted, they're like, you know, what would you do? I'd be right. I'd come back here. You know, it's like that. Have you heard the story of Diogenes and Alexander the Great? At the bathtub and stuff?
Tell me.
Okay. So Diogenes is laying in his bathtub, which he used to do. And just hang out in the sunbathe, laying in this like pool of water, right? Alexander the Great comes to Diogenes the Cynic and says, and Diogenes says, you know, what do you want? And he says, I want to conquer all of Greece. And he's like, and then what? Well, I want to conquer Persia. And he names these other places. And Diogenes says, and then what? He goes, I want to conquer the known world. He's like, and then what? And Alexander the Great says, I don't know, I guess. I saw relax and enjoy myself. And Diogenes says, why don't you just relax and enjoy yourself? And Alexander just starts cracking up and says, if I could not be Alexander, I would rather be Diogenes than any other man.
There you go.
And Diogenes says, if I could not be Diogenes, I would rather be any other man than Alexander. And Alexander laughs again and says, I am the ruler of every, as far as you could travel in days or whatever. I have the power to give you anything is in my hands. Ask and it's yours. Yeah. And he says, could you remove yourself between me and the light? Like he was standing, you're standing nice. In my sun.
Very nice.
I like to think of Peter Martin as a modern day Diogenes.
Yeah.
Except he's got a program. Yeah. So so we were reading these essays for the today's greeting group. We're reading these essays.
Yep.
About Peter Martin by Dorothy Day and actual little easy essays, he calls them, which are these little pithy things.
Yeah.
And
Little proverbs.
I think we're going
to parables.
I think we should have a dramatic reading of some of these pithy little easy essays. And you strike me as kind of a Marinian kind of visage, you know, the beard and the,
I don't live
the
up
sweater,
to
you know,
only by mockery,
yeah,
I can't stand up to him.
I have
a friend who does one, Jeremiah Barker,
who he is Peter Mann, huh?
Oh man.
Well, I know a woman who
few living saints that you know in life.
Really?
Yeah.
I know a woman in Michigan who is Dorothy Day, so we should get them in the same place, and maybe they'll take over the world, and they won't let us come because we're not good enough to hang out. They'll take the poor and the downtrodden. All right, so what are some of these that struck you? We're going to talk about this in the reading, but we got people that aren't going to be in the group. So tell me some of these things that struck you.
Yeah, let's read a little. I think we should just start by reading Martin.
Read some Martin to me.
Okay. So his easy essays, he didn't write much.
Right.
His imprint on certainly the Catholic worker culture, but also his imprint on Catholic culture as such is immense. Whereas the technical and official writing that he produced seems to be small.
Yeah.
Fittingly, much like Socrates, much like the greats, right? What they actually wrote down was small. What people that actually encountered these people,
it seems like,
have to say about them could fill volume.
It seems like the greater you are, the less you write.
Yeah.
Look at Jesus never wrote a thing except something in the sand once that we don't know what it was.
G.K. Chesterton, the exception being G.K. Chesterton.
Well,
he was great in stature and in mind and in life.
I like to think I have a certain
Chestertonian
largesse. Certain largesse, if you will, you know, at least a certain Chestertonian corpulence. And
I'm working on it.
Well, you're sweating it off under that sweater. We got to get you cooled off so you can keep some of those.
So Peter Marin, he writes one of his easy essays. They look like poems. They look like poems. They're little quips.
Yeah.
They're little parables. They're little sayings. You know, Confucian gone a Catholic social worker. And let's just read a few. What the Catholic Worker Believes.
Mm-hmm.
Title. The Catholic Worker Believes in the Gentle Personalism of Traditional Catholicism.
Mm-hmm.
What a line.
Yeah.
The Gentle Personalism of Traditional Catholicism. The Catholic Worker Believes in the Personal Obligation of Looking After the Needs of Our Brother. The Catholic Worker Believes in the Daily Practice of the Works of Mercy. The Catholic Worker Believes in the Houses of Hospitality for the Immediate Relief of Those Who Are in Need. The Catholic Worker Believes in the Establishment of Farming Communes, where each one works according to his ability and gets according to his need. Now listen close. The Catholic Worker Believes in creating a new society within the shell of the old.
Come on.
The philosophy of the new, which is not a new philosophy, but a very old philosophy, a philosophy so old, in fact, that it looks like the new.
Preach on. I know that's the truth.
It sounds to me much like Alistair MacIntyre's conclusion at the end of After Virtue, that the maintenance of culture, of all things true and good,
mm-hmm.
comes in the form of creating new societies within the shell of the old, inured, meditating, contemplating upon the philosophies that are old but are new because they're so old.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they're so old that they've been forgotten. That's what I was struck with. That's not explicitly present in number 6 on his little easy essay on what the Catholic Worker Believes. That it's a philosophy that's so old that by nature of the fact that, as Wendell Berry says, those, by the inevitable rule, that those who have forgotten forget that they have forgotten, which seems imminently true to me, that that new way, that new philosophy, which Marin champions, he's so good at uniting the reality of thought and life, which seems to be one of the fundamental things that afflicts us today.
We only got a few minutes left, so read two more real fast, the big ones.
Says this: the Catholic Worker believes in creating a new society.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a revolutionary, right?
Yeah.
No, he's not. Within the shell of the old, still seems revolutionary.
Mm.
With the philosophy of the new, still seems like a revolutionary. Which is not a new philosophy. Now he's not a revolutionary, but a radical.
Oh.
In the old sense of the word, getting back to the roots, which is the philosophy of the new, which is not a new philosophy,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
but a very old philosophy, a philosophy so old that it looks like new.
And with that, unfortunately, we have to pull the plug, pop the cork on another episode of Counterposition.
I take your place, marble stone. I take your place, marble stone.